the last couple of weeks, I've been talking about the passion of balancing and the balancing of passion. And we have been searching for ways that we can get this process of getting into a balance after we lose our balance, getting it into our daily lives, into our thinking, feeling, and acting. And we also defined balance, or the art of balancing, as thinking, feeling, acting from a higher good, a higher truth, a higher beauty. And one might add, a higher love. And when any one of those are out of a balance, if we have more than one operating, more or less than one operating, thinking, feeling, or acting, the result is being out of a balance. And we asked ourselves a lot of questions. How we might get this balance back. It's simply a matter at first of being emotionally honest. Briefly, a summary of last couple of weeks. Being emotionally honest, honest about our behavior, honest about our thoughts, being willing to explore the inner terrain of the self. Today, I would like to speak to you about the art of living that our culture seems to be determined to take from us. I have been enamored once again of a book I remember reading in one of my first philosophy classes in the 1970s. A book by Eric Fromm called The Art of Loving, which I'm sure most of us have one time in our lives have read. It was published in 1956. It's amazing, you know, when we go back and look at these, at the great classics, they are timeless because they are about someone who was willing to really go on the inner journey. Today's lesson will be entitled Mastering the Art of Living. Because as I was reading the chapter on practicing love and reading the various characteristics that Eric Fromm was talking about that we need in order to practice love in our world, the word that kept coming to me was just life. Not only love, but life and living. And that, isn't that what we are attempting to do in all of our recoveries, is learning how to live and learning the art of living. And actually, not to sound self-righteous and arrogant, but I believe that all of us are really wanting to master the art of living. That this is becoming a value for many of us. How do we live? And we are constantly getting flack, if you will, or there's an incredible amount of energy that is going against us when we are attempting to learn, once again, the art of living, isn't there? When we begin to learn the art of living, we're talking about being out in the world. We're talking about our relationships. We're talking about our relationships with our family, mother, father, sister, brother, our children, our significant others, our friends, our lovers, our husbands, our wives, our co-workers in the workplace. We are talking about life. And Eric Fromm knew this in 1956. He knew that most of the tools that are necessary for our living or our loving are really not valued by our culture. And he begins with, and I'm almost scared to mention this word, discipline. But he knows that Western society has a real tough time with the word discipline, and I want to bring this to you because it's as fresh today as it was in 1956. He says most folks really don't like the word discipline. It's because we are so busy trying to rebel from authoritarianism. Because discipline has been forced upon us from without, from outside. Also, discipline means routine, having to do something every day. Discipline has been watered down to mean I need to do something that I am told. Or discipline means punishment from something that I did not do. And he says that's why we hate the word so much. And then he says what happens is the rebelliousness takes the form of an infantile self-indulgence. Namely, when we are not working, we want to be lazy, we want to slouch. To use a nicer word, Eric Fromm says, relax. We just want to relax. So we're being forced to work 8-plus hours a day. Some of us 6-7 hours a day. Some of us two income family homes to make ends meet. Punching a clock. At the end of the week, something called, some of us remember way back in our memory, something called happy hour. Right? That's the hour that turned into 2, 3, 4 and turned into happy days, and I'm not talking about the TV program. Right? And then happy months and then happy years, and all of a sudden, oh my God, what's going on with my life? So this made sense to me. I thought this is really fresh stuff. And so I basically what I'm gonna do today is sort of retranslate maybe in some modern language this wonderful classic, The Art of Loving, by Eric Fromm. So nothing original, but it was so powerful. He says, so it goes against our grain of how we have been forced to do things from without, that when we hear the word discipline, we immediately get very, very, we can get angry, we can get frantic, we can become very passive-aggressive in wanting to rebel. But he says, one of the first tools of the art of living is this notion of not doing things when we're in the mood, but doing something because our life is dedicated to it. But our culture goes against that. Our culture goes against that. The next requirement, if you will, for the art of living, or the tools we need for the art of living, is concentration. To use Eric Fromm's word, maybe the term we're using more today is not concentration, but focus. Being present. He said it's very rare in our culture. First of all, because of consumerism. We're constantly doing a number of things, right, that utilize all our senses. I'm on the phone, and now I just recently got a phone that is a cordless. Oh, God, I've gone crazy with this cordless phone. I can, do a number of things with this now, right? I don't have to just talk with somebody on the phone. I can, be washing my car. I can be washing the dishes. I can be making up the bed. I can be even in the shower cleaning the tub. I can be, gardening outside. I can be doing a number of things talking on the phone now. And then we can have the TV on, right, as we're exercising, and then we turn the sound off. And so all we sort of see is the image of MTV or whatever. We live in a society that we have to really struggle to be concentrating and being present to exactly what we're doing. And I've mentioned this a few weeks ago in terms of exercise, right? We have all of these, this gear, you know. You know, I mean, some of us even have, quadraphonic CDs, you know, with speakers out the, you know, the earphones that come back to us, you know, while we're running. We're doing a number of things at the same time. And we can't be alone with ourselves. Immediately when we're alone by ourselves, we feel as though that is something that is negative, our culture says. If you're alone, that's bad. If you're alone, you're not healthy, is what the message of culture is telling us, correct? So we don't value being alone. But Eric Fromm says if we can't be alone with ourselves and concentrated, we cannot understand focusing or being present in the now. I quote, "To sit still without talking, smoking, reading, drinking is impossible for most people." And Eric Fromm says, smoking is one of the symptoms of this lack of concentration because it occupies our hands, our mouth, our eyes, and our nose. Those of you who are counting the minutes before you kind of take a smoke break out there, right? Or when we talk to somebody, immediately we light up because we're afraid to be really concentrated in listening to what someone has to say to us without medicating. Because we constantly have to have things going on in our being. Our culture really works against it. It gives us and provides for us many ways that we can lack concentration. And for Eric Fromm, we will not be masters of the art of living if we don't work on concentration. The third is patience. Third tool for the mastering the art of living is patience. Well, forget that. Our whole industrial complex fosters exactly the opposite. It fosters quickness. So it doesn't at all foster patience. All of what is out there in terms of productivity fosters quickness. You can get it fast. And what we are also seeing, of course, is that we get real upset when we lose time, don't we? When something does not come our way. I mean, I was recently in the express lane at the supermarket, thinking I would only get 3 or 4 articles and that I would be in this thing called the express lane. Well, the express lane took me almost 5 minutes. Can you imagine that? I've got something better to do with my time. Or the places where we wash our car. We don't want to fool around and like wash it ourselves. It would be a waste of time. So we go into this machine, you know, with our car and have them wash it, right? Or now we have, you know, quick and easy wax that only takes a few minutes. Everything is instant, right? Microwave. Everything is quick. It goes against our whole notion of, this whole notion of patience. And then when we have time, right, we kill it. So we don't know what to do with our time that we have. So we spend all this time making sure that everything happens very quickly, and then we kill it. It's not really our fault. You know, we have been shaped. So much of our life and activity and behavior and attitudes have been shaped. So now that we are awakening, you know, into the, you know, stages of recovery here, you know, it's probably important to talk about this because it's happening to all of us. So it's no big surprise, you know, that it's hard to live out there in the world in recovery. It's hard to live out there in the world, period, in terms of mastering the art of living with such values as Eric Fromm is talking about. He says if we really want to become a master in any art, we have to give our whole life to it. We need to be devoted to it. We need to be in a constant state of awareness, alertness, and activity, and avoiding inner laziness. Authentic discipline is the opposite of force. Actually, it's closer to the realm of addiction. Really, isn't it? Discipline? I thought of it, Eric Fromm didn't probably even know the word, you know, in 1956, but he said this. He said, the kind of discipline that is healthy is when one slowly accustoms oneself to a kind of behavior which one would eventually miss if one stopped practicing it. I deal with that every day. You know, right? It does make a whole lot. So it's actually a like addiction, but it's doing behaviors that at first we don't really like, but eventually we come to miss it. But see, we have a Western concept that has to be annihilated. I really believe it's a Western notion that if we are to do anything good, it has to involve always and forever pain. I was brought up with that belief. I was brought up with that. It was a spiritual belief in my family that if you felt good, it had to be bad. Okay? So whenever it felt lousy, you were close to being holy. But you had to dislike it. That's a Western notion. The East doesn't even know what that is like. The Eastern notion of spirituality is that what is really good and what is really whole and what is holy should be agreeable to body and soul. But at first, one needs to get in touch with some resistances. Because there will be initially resistances to a higher good, a higher truth, higher beauty, higher happiness at first. But if we develop new attitudes and new behaviors and new thoughts and new feelings, then we will be so accustomed to this new way of being that we will miss it if we don't do it. And I know that many of you here sitting today are experiencing that. You know, it's almost like, well, God, I missed my meeting today. I'm talking about folks who are kind of in recovery a while. Missing the meeting. Like, God, I'm missing this meeting. And, you know, God, it really hurt. I feel like something is sort of empty because I missed the meeting. You know? Or this new activity that we are doing with being creative. We're missing going back to it. This painting or this drawing that we're doing. It's almost like, gosh, I'm tearing myself away from that. I wanted to go do that. We have this sense of missing a real positive action. In a life-enhancing activity, when we begin to miss these things, we are on the way to understanding what authentic discipline is about. But it is really an Eastern notion. The West has no notion of this, especially in terms of spiritual endeavors. If it feels bad, it must be good. Okay? But the Eastern notion is that really all should be agreeable to body and soul in terms of what one needs to be disciplined with. Although in the beginning, there may be some resistance. Isn't that wonderful? I think this is such a healthy concept, but we've all but lost it here in the West. As for concentration, Eric Fromm says, easy. Avoid trivial conversation, bad company, and zombies. Isn't that great? And he defines zombies as people whose soul is dead, who chatter instead of talk, and to always assert cliché opinions instead of thinking. 1956. And the other thing is to embrace being alone without this continual sense of sadness and emptiness and desperation. It's part of it, probably a lot of it, has to do with two things. One is that we've lost a self. We don't really have a self because it was taken from us, right? And so when we are alone, we get real scared. So, I mean, I know that there are some traumas, But the other is that we have been trained by consumer society in the West to devalue being alone. Right? When do you ever look at something that's being sold in the media and see somebody alone? They're always sort of having a party. Right? I think the closest thing one gets to this is seeing this Grand Cherokee on top of the mountain. You know? Sort of be alone with your things. You know, that no one else has. You know? So true concentration actually makes us more awake and not sleepy and tired, right? Don't we go, when we talk about concentration discipline, you know, if I'm going to be concentrating, I'm getting a headache because I'm trying to listen. That's not what we're talking about in terms of concentration. Concentration actually invigorates our being and awakens us and keeps us alert to all of the aspects of reality. Concentration is about being in the present and listening, feeling, being aware of our body, being aware of our step, being aware of the tonalities of voice and the music of the universe. It is being present. And then it is also, it seems to me, concentration is has something to do with depth, doesn't it? It has something to do with being open so we can allow for the energy of things, the soul of things, to come inside us and energize us. 2 weeks from today, I'm going to be talking about that in terms of soul. We're going to go on a journey of soul. The loss of self and the desire for soul in a couple of weeks. But where we seem to be in terms of concentration is, you know what, we're probably concentrating on things that are boring. That's probably why we get tired. We're concentrating on things that give us a headache because probably they're not really valuable to our soul. You know, we're focusing on things that really aren't a part of ourselves. And that's why we have a difficult time focusing or concentrating. So this is another tool in the art of living is to work on concentrating and just being there, being present. You know, you don't even have to sit here and listen to anything I'm saying to concentrate. Of course, I always fear that no one is. But that's my own stuff. That's my own stuff. But you know, you don't. If you're thinking too hard, well, what exactly does Neil mean by all this? Just be there. Be here. That's all. Let go. You don't have to strain a cosmic muscle to really be there and to understand all that you need to know. Eric Fromm says, one of the main conditions for the achievement of the art of living is the overcoming of one's narcissism. 1956. He says, the narcissist cannot separate what is out there or who is out there from a picture that is formed from one's desire and fear. Did you just strain a muscle? What he's saying is that the narcissist is someone who is not awakened from the dream that one is all-powerful and all-knowing. Because as children, we all have this sense that we are all-powerful and all-knowing. And actually, we are as infants. We are all-powerful and all-knowing because we are the same as being God. But what happens is we begin to grow up and we have to then go on this path of not being God, This path of not being one, but being the many. This path of being involved in limitations, right? We are all here on this planet to undergo and learning difficult lessons. But Eric Fromm says that a lot of us keep a vestige, well, even more than a vestige, you know, of narcissism, which sort of is this illusion that we are all-knowing and all-powerful. And so what happens is, when we are in the world, we will interpret the world according to our own desire and fear, eventual fear. And when we do this, we distort reality. And so Eric Fromm says it's an important activity in the art of mastering living to be objective. That is, allowing ourselves to sit and be aware of other people and their feelings without interpreting it so quickly. And even being with things and not always interpreting ourselves in terms of those things. Do I want it? Do I want to possess it? Am I afraid of it? Will it hurt me? Can I have dominion over it? And he gives some examples of this kind of distortion, which is narcissistic. One, he says, is idealizing. For instance, when I fall in love and I'm always wanting this person to fit this image of my ideal, and we've heard that a lot. And they never seem to do that. I mean, you know, they've got a lot of potential, but they just can't meet this ideal that I have. He says, this is total distortion. In fact, we will never let the real person and the mystery of who they are emerge, which is much better than our ideal, if we're constantly comparing them to an ideal. And then another example he gives is the husband who gets resentful when his wife seems to be demanding or domineering. And Eric Fromm says probably what that's about is projection. He says probably what that's about is this guy hasn't been able to leave his mother. He's so attached to his mother, and he's been trying to leave his mother all this time, that whenever his wife makes some kind of demand, which might be very realistic, he thinks it's his mother. So he gets angry and resentful. That's called projection. So he's resentful toward his wife when in actuality he's projecting that, or maybe it's transference, I don't know these terms, who cares? Bottom line is we do it, you know, and it makes us very, very unhappy. And what occurs in those two examples is a distortion, isn't it? Whether we are idealizing someone and so we can never allow their real being to emerge, or whether or not we are transferring or projecting some past resentment onto someone. And of course, Eric Fromm finally gets to the notion of parenting. And he says, we do a terrible job of this, because he says, to be objective with a child really means not destroying their own kind of unique potentializing of themselves. And once we begin to say, well, do this for my approval, and do this, this is right, this is wrong, we're not allowing, we're not seeing, we're not experiencing the objective soul of a thing and allowing this soul to emerge and develop, are we? We're actually lacking faith. And he gets back, he finally gets to this whole notion that without faith in ourselves as thinking, feeling, and acting beings, without faith in a core self, that I have a core self that is willing to be committed, that I will be here tomorrow for you, or that I will be here today, because I have a core self, despite my change of opinions, which hopefully I will change, despite my change of ideas, which hopefully I will change, I will be here committed because I have a self. If I can't be committed, I have a lack of faith in myself. And I will not be committed to you either if I have a lack of faith in me. I cannot have faith in you. And if I don't have faith in you, I'm going to have to control you, aren't I? See how it connects to this whole notion of parenting. And probably if I've been controlled in my life because someone did not have faith in my own soul, in the potentials of my being, I'm not going to have faith when I grow up. I'm going to want to control other folks. I'm going to be afraid of their actualizing of their potential. And so it is a notion of faith. We're talking about real core faith here. We're not talking about some kind of faith in an idea, are we? We're not talking about faith in some kind of dogma or religion here, you know. We're not even talking about faith in an intellectual sense and faith in God. But we are talking about the faith that may be a characteristic of God. I'll say that again. We may be talking about faith as a characteristic of the way that God functions. What we are saying is that the living God probably has faith in humanity because he or she must allow for this person to make decisions. Correct? Must allow for the potential of this person to grow and cannot force this thing, this process. And so actually what we're talking about is putting on the very faith as a function or characteristic that God must possess. Because he or she cannot control us. So it is a faith that involves believing in a core self, believing in the soul of humanity that is even talking about all these values. Okay? And then it is believing in you. That if I simply give you a bit of guidance, if you give me a bit of guidance and encouragement, that your potential and my potential will be actualized. Remember last week when Gandhi was asked about his compassionate politics, about serving others? How did you arrive at being so selfless, right? And Gandhi answered in a typical Zen Buddhist fashion, and even in the fashion that Jesus sometimes answered with paradox. He said, the only reason why I serve others is for self-actualization. In other words, look, don't give me this, you know, hocus pocus, I'm selfless over here and surrendering myself. That's victim stuff. I'm serving others so I can self-actualize me. Somehow there is a clue in serving others that tells me about myself. But if I don't have a self to begin with, I'm going to be resentful, right? I'm going to hold resentments over others because I gave and then I didn't get back, etc., etc. But if we are looking at that whole project as a project of actualizing ourselves, becoming awake, becoming empowered, then it all begins to make sense because it is about an art of living, an art of brushing off and sharpening, or maybe even finding once again those tools of discipline, of concentration and focus, of patience, of concern, of deep concern that is willing to devote my life to the art of being human, to the art of living, to the art of loving. And what happens as a result of this art that we practice day to day and become masters of? Eric Fromm says what happens as a result of this is we will have more energy, we will be more vitalized, and we will be productive in every stream of what we do. We will be productive in our work, in our play, in our relationships, in all of our affairs. We will be productive. Sounds to me like the 12 steps. We practice these principles in all our affairs. Right? Isn't that a wonderful vision? So he says, that's why if one learns this art, one cannot just say, well, okay, I'm going to practice this, but only the people who I am really close to. You know, Eric Fromm says, no. Where we do it in one place, we have to do it in every place. In fact, what will happen is each will feed the other. By my ability to love the stranger, by my ability to understand how to live in a way of faith, of good faith with those who I don't know, my relationships with those who I am closer to will develop and become stronger. Conversely, if I begin to isolate myself from the outer world, from the cosmic global purpose of loving the stranger, are loving my enemy. My relationships with those who I am closest to will be hurt, will suffer. So it's a way of loving all of creation and loving things once again. It is terrible to see what we've done to things. Things have a soul too. So it's not only people, but it's the place where we live. It's acquiring the art of allowing things to speak to us with their soul. We've lost the sense of being artful, haven't we? That's what I'm talking about. We've lost the sense of being artful, because to be artful means to allow soul of the world, the animus mundi, to once again be shown to us and revealed to us. That buildings have a soul. A baseball glove has a soul. A ballerina's shoe has a soul. What do I mean? I mean a sense of dignity, that if we care for it, because it is a reflection of God. That's the whole notion of soul anyway, isn't it? That everything in this world is an image and reflection of God who created. That means that everything need to be revered and respected. And if we listen to these things that are speaking to us, as Rilke talks about, rerun of Rilke, things of the world silently speak to us and speak to us of loving, of perishing, you know, the loss of heart. You know, it is everything that we encounter in this art of living and mastering it. This is the good news to all of us, to all of you who have started the path of recovery. It's not only recovery from, it is recovery of the lost potentials in the very soul of humanity. Isn't it? In other words, it is the most fantastic journey we have ever even hoped to begin. It cannot be boring unless we are boring. But it demands cultivating these attitudes, practicing them day to day. When will we be perfect at them? Probably never. But we can master them. And by the way, mastering always means having a sense of humility, that one is always a beginner. That's another paradox. Moraha Yushiba, the great Aikido master, when he had finally even come to the apex of his art, of mastering the martial art, before he died, said, "I am only a beginner." And he was called Master O-sensei. So it always takes a sense of humility. If we master something, or we are always in the process of mastering, and then we say, "Now I am master," right? We've lost it all. We've lost it all. We've become narcissistic once again. We become grandiose once again, and we lose it. So the master needs to realize that he or she is always a beginner, correct? "I have a master of arts," right? "I have a master's of science. Now I'm a master." You know, such ridiculous, right? Anyone knows that once we get these things, no wonder why we have such low self-esteem, right? We get these certificates, we get these degrees, or we get this job. We go, "Oh God, I don't really feel like I'm a master." Well, of course not. You don't feel like you're a master, because we never are. Totally. We're always in the process of learning and learning and learning and learning. Always, forever. Always beginners. Always learning in this art, this wonderful, wondrous art of living.